Am I on? Ooh, there we go. Do the sound check. Lovely. Well, we're back this morning looking at some of the stories that Jesus told. And Dan started off, you've just heard from Dan if you're visiting here today. Dan started off the series last week looking at the wise and foolish builders. And if you weren't here to hear it, I'd encourage you to go and to find it. You'll find it on YouTube or on our website because it was very good. It was very good. But he told us that Jesus was a master storyteller. And he was, wasn't it? Do I have any Star Wars or Lord of the Rings? Yeah. So some storytellers take us to fantastical places, like the planet of Endor, or Mirkwood Forest, or something like that. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus used everyday occurrences with everyday things to illustrate the lives of everyday people, because they were the people who were listening to his stories. You know, sometimes I'm asked if we actually ever found out the name of the Good Samaritan, or whether the prodigal brother and his the prodigal son and his brother ever got reunited. And I have to say, no, we don't know that, because these stories are great stories. They're powerful tales, but they are illustrations. They're not true in the fact that they actually happened. That being said, I want to assure everybody that no rich fool was harmed in the making of Jesus' parable about him or in my sermon this morning. But as an everyday occurrence that Jesus used, I bet you there's a bunch of you here who can either sympathize or have had the everyday occurrence happen of being called in to mediate or to be an arbiter. That's the word used in the text today, so I'll throw it in there. Into somebody else's problem. Into some argument between people, some disagreement. I mean, if you are a parent or if you are an older sibling, I don't think you could have got much through life without being called in to mediate a problem. Or at school, between friends, how often do you get called in to part the waters? Or at work, when there are colleagues in disagreement. These are sorts of everyday occurrences, aren't they? And this is the setting that Luke tells us in chapter 12 that Jesus finds himself in. Luke writes in chapter 12, verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, Jesus, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. And Jesus replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? So that little exchange was the backdrop of what Jesus goes on to teach about. And it was a powerful teaching he brings here, a teaching in two parts. One for a man who wanted more, and one to people who are really worried that they don't have enough. But in both parts, Jesus turns our eyes off trust in ourselves. He says, maybe don't be a super controller. Jesus turns our eyes to the true source of peace, the true source of our provision, God. He's our faithful provider. Whoa, that really went far. There we go. Is that one? Yeah, there we go. There. Who remembers this picture? This is, do you remember Adam? You should. You've read this so many times. This was a storybook our kids had as they were growing up. I found it in some secondhand store in Cambodia. And so this is the picture that I'm using for our rich old fool. We're going to get into the first bit. It's the parable of the rich fool. And Jane is here to help illustrate it. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. But he thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." And then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and I will build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? For this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God." Thank you, Jane. It's been a while since we've seen Jane up here, which is awesome. But what have you trusted in yourselves this week? What is it that's occupied your thoughts? That you've spent your time on it? What have you put your security in this week? What is it that you've tried to have complete control over? You know, at the beginning of this week, I was sent a video of a child taking their first steps. The mother had no control over when that would happen, but was so excited. At the end of the week, I went and visited someone who is trying so hard to be able to regain the ability to take steps after a medical event. Have the clicker. Thank you. And while everybody standing here, or sitting here, might think we're closer to when we took our first steps, or closer to when we might not be able to step, one thing that we can be really, really certain of is, as Dan said, there's change ahead. The only certainty in life is that there will be uncertainty. That's a modern adage, isn't it? I'm sure most of us have heard that one. And this parable tackles that thought. Jesus challenges where we trust and how we think we have control over things. You know, sometimes Jesus' parables take a little bit more unpacking than this one. You know, I don't know about you, but it's been a while since I took a first century fishing net and cast it out over the waters. And I haven't walked the same route that Jesus pulled up in people's minds when he talked about the story of the Good Samaritan. But this story of sudden death just when that final brick of self-sufficiency had been obtained. It's a common one in our time too, isn't it? When just when we have our pack of cards all beautifully built there, one of them slips away and we see life changing once again. You know, I've had many times in my own life as well where I've thought, I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to spend these years doing this. And I'll have time later to do that or spend time with that person, just to find that actually things have changed. I can no longer do what I thought I would do. Circumstances have gone out of my control. I can't do them. I've had more than a few conversations with people whose dreams have been shattered when thoughts of what they would love to do as they retire, what they would love to do with someone who was close to them, is not to be fulfilled. Things have changed. They haven't had control over circumstances. And we have our rich, old fool. Well, was he old? We have our rich fool. Hard work and sacrifice. Is that good or bad? I think it's good. It's not a bad thing, is it? God set us originally in a garden to work. But too often we are like the fool. There's no sign of him relying on God to direct his actions. Jesus shows us a man who only consults with himself, whose security is placed firmly in himself, and who considers himself to be the controller of his own destiny. And I think we can fall into that trap pretty easily too, can't we? We can start to rely totally on ourselves as though we have total control and that we are our own source of peace and security. You know, I have a mortgage. Well, Adam and I have a mortgage. You know, we're trying really hard to pay it down as quickly as we can. We'd like to be mortgage-free by the time we're retired. That's not a bad thing. I think there's financial wisdom in that. But when we rely on that and ourselves as our sense of security, shall I go like that? Skylar is having fun with the phone over there. It can undercut our reliance on God. And we fool ourselves into thinking that we have control, that we are the masters of our own destiny. You know, we may not consider ourselves rich, but it's pretty easy to fool ourselves into thinking that we're being wise when actually we're just wrapping up an idol of self-sufficiency and putting a thin covering of Christianity on it. You know, it's a bit like prosperity doctrine. It doesn't work, because we're just taking our modern idols of consumerism and greed and putting a thin layer of Christianity on it. But the rich fool in this story isn't being judged for being rich, but for relying on his riches and trusting in himself alone. He built bigger barns, we saw. Jane Barnes showed us how to build bigger barns. But he had no room for God, only his surplus grain. And he mistook his possessions for peace. And he mistook his control for security. What are we mistaking for peace here today? know, what are we trying to control as though our ultimate destiny is in our own hands? You know, as we get our breaking news on our phone, as we read the paper or wherever we get our news from, you know, the politics in the globe is looking quite different at the moment, isn't it? From the last few years, last couple of decades. You know, I take great comfort that the Jesus who told us these stories, he lived in politically turbulent times too. He lived in occupied territory. The Romans were there. But the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, was no peace. It was fear and it was subjugation. So over these last few months, I've had more than a few conversations with people who are expressing a deep fear at what they read. They're seeing the trust that they put in these post-war global institutions and the global checks and balances that we had being dismantled. But they were never the source of true peace. There are other people that I've had conversations with who nod and they go, yeah, isn't it a shame? We're really tired of seeing people do what people do in every generation, mistaking political strength for true power and military domination for true peace. But then we end our conversations in prayer because Jesus continues to point us to the true source of peace, the true source of our provision, which is himself. Because he is faithful through all of the change, through all of our uncertainty. Jesus, God, is faithful. I say it again. What is it that we are putting our trust in this morning? What are we prioritizing? You know, are we currently pouring our lives into a life that's purely centered around us, ourselves, our comfort? Are we trying to hoard wealth? Now, I've been to many of your places, and I'm just trying to think if I've seen any big silos out the back for the surplus grain. I don't think I have. But what are we trying to store up? Or maybe we are rolling up our sleeves and we're sharing generously. And when we hear Jesus calling to say, come, invest in my kingdom, build my kingdom, are we doing that? You know, we might be tempted to think, though, that this particular parable is one where Jesus is being an anti-capitalist and is anti-wealth. And if we left our reading right here, we might think that. But it's a really good habit, as I say often, if we're reading a piece of scripture, to read a little bit beforehand, like we did today. We saw what sparked off this teaching. And then read a little bit forward on, a little bit afterwards as well. Because Jesus continues on his teaching here. And he continues on like this. And then Jesus said to his disciples, therefore, because of that last thing, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than the birds? Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. And if that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here tomorrow, today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you? You have little faith. So I don't know what woke you up this morning. It was daylight savings beginning? Yep. Always forget which one's beginning, which one's ending. But birds woke me up chirping this morning. And yesterday I finally found enough time to get out into the garden and kind of, you know, with the machete and find the two tulips that were actually blooming in my garden this year. You know, spring is beautiful when you don't have hay fever. Just apologies for those who do. I have hay fever sufferers in my house. No, but the birds have not been able to adjust the seasons. They haven't been able to make them more daylight. And yet they're busy building their nests for the next generation to come. They are trusting somehow that it will happen. And those two little tulip bulbs, well, they did not plant themselves. Yet they were swaying in the spring breeze. I finally had success. You know, whereas that rich fool was directed to someone, the parable of the rich fool was directed to someone who had wealth or wanted wealth, this teaching is directed to the 90% of the Galilean population that they consider would have been either living near to or at subsistence level. They estimate that a third of the people living in that area would have been below subsistence. And Jesus taught in illustrations that the people he was speaking to understood, would know. You know, these people around him didn't have the resources to go around building bigger and better barns, let alone having surplus grain to put in them. Jane is still building bigger barns out there every time I say it. You know, to people who didn't have this regular source of income that they could put away, Jesus here isn't dismissing their needs either. But he points them in the same way as he points the wealthy to the God who knows, who sees, and who ultimately provides. The answer, Jesus says, is not to cultivate more seed. It's not to cultivate more control like the rich fool did, but to cultivate their faith in a faithful God. Because God is the true source of peace. He is the true source of our provision. But what does that look like to do that? Well, we're going to finish up this morning with how Jesus finished up this lesson, this teaching. And he says, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the poor, provide purses for yourself that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." When I first went to Cambodia, I was a lot younger and I was unmarried. And it was still in the last stages of civil war. Khmer Rouge was still active in the northern parts, and they would frequently come down and they would massacre entire villages of people. They would steal and take everything that they could find. The people who lived in those areas had no trust in financial institutions because there had been a whole bunch of banks that had come and had gone with their money. And so they did what a lot of people did, and I think a lot of people in places of war these days still do, and that's you bury your wealth. Well, pretty soon after I had arrived in the country, we had this little daily paper called the Phnom Penh Post. And it had a story about a couple in this area. They were an older couple who had lived through some horrific times, but had managed to squirrel away some money. And let's say it was something like $60. That was their life savings. And they had wrapped it very carefully and put bands around it, and they had put it in a tin, and they had buried it under their house where the pigs and the cows would wander through. And one day they went to get it, and they dug it up, and it had been eaten. The termites had got in it. It had gone. People, it's not just a story. This happens. Even the very, very best of hiding places can't protect earthly treasure from time, from termites, from mold. But Jesus here urges us to invest in his eternal treasure. Acts of love, acts of generosity, acts of faith, acts of trust in him. Whatever paddle of kingdom building that we are, you know, that God is prompting you to pick up and to stick in the water, those are deposits that can't rot, they can't rust, they can't be stolen. I mean, for me, for you, if somebody looked at our lives today, would they be able to say, oh, yep, I know where that person is investing? What evidence would someone find looking at our lives that we're investing into the eternal and that Jesus was our blue chip stock that we're putting all of our money into? You know, I don't know where you're at financially, where you're at with trust and health, what your concerns and your worries are that you bring here this morning, but I do know that God does. And that Jesus has something to say to us about it. That God is our true source of peace and provision. You know, to the person here, the person who's comfortable enough to be trusting in yourself, who thinks that you control your own fortune, or your own career decision, it's not too late to change your mind. But Jesus warns, don't forget who gave you your life. Make sure you turn to God, because he's the true source of peace and provision. And to the person who's really worried about what this day has in store, about having enough for this day, let alone tomorrow, Jesus says your Father knows what you need. Make sure that you turn to God, because he is the true source of peace and provision. And to all of us, God says, I am the true source of your peace and provision. Invest in my kingdom. As Jesus calls to us all, saying, seek first the kingdom of God. We're going to finish with a song. This morning, just as we finish with a song, seek Jesus, because he is the true source of peace and our provision. Thank you.
We're going to sing Majesty to finish off.